Hi, welcome to the Design Thinking Roundtable, a podcast which explores various aspects of design and how it can create change and social impact. I'm Anna Fayard, an ethnographer who researches, teaches, and practices human-centered design with a focus on social innovation and collaboration. And I love having conversation on design with passionate and mindful designers. Isaac is the founder of Mideva Labs, a research, design, and innovation consultancy studio based in Nairobi, Kenya. He's also the co-founder of Ideo Studio Africa, a community-powered learning and skill development studio helping young professionals to work in innovation and entrepreneurship. Isaac previously co-founded the Africa Yes program, a six-month leadership and entrepreneurship accelerator for young social entrepreneurs in Kenya. They have supported over 80 entrepreneurs to launch social ventures since 2019. Isaac has over 8 years of experience working in the design, social innovation, and entrepreneurship ecosystem across Africa and supporting initiatives around the world, including working for OpenIDEO. He has a passion for designing with and working with communities and young people to achieve impact. So today I have the pleasure to be in conversation with Isaac, who is our Spring 2023 Social Innovator in Residence, invited by the ERA Chair in Social Innovation and the DESIS Lab at Nova SBE. Isaac, thanks so much for joining us this week and joining me on the Design Thinking Roundtable podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Isaac, you are currently a co-founder of both Mideva Labs, the research, design, and innovation consultancy that you started a couple of years back, and Ideo Studio Africa. Can you tell me more about your journey from a bachelor in computer science to social innovation, design thinking, and impact?
Thank you so much. First, I'm delighted to be here. It's been an exciting week just to have an experience within the Nova SBE program as a social innovator in residence. And yeah, I'm excited also to have a chance to have this conversation with you. My journey started back in, I think, 2015, and immediately after my bachelor's degree in computer science in Kenya. It's funny because I was graduating on Friday, and Monday I was on Sunday I was set out to go to Ghana into a new country. And in Ghana, I was glad to be part of a program. It's called the MEST program, which is Meltwater Entrepreneurial School of Technology program. And basically, this is a one-year funded program in technology entrepreneurship, where you spend the whole year just learning how to identify challenges in the ecosystem and working with different teams to build innovative solutions that are powered by technology, pitching those ideas to a team of investors and interested parties, and getting feedback on the same, and then having also a chance to like change your idea or change your team. And the goal of that was for you to be able to build the mindsets, the skills, and all the capacity you needed to, you know, venture forward in solving some of the biggest challenges in Africa, leveraging technology to do that. So I think that was my start into the journey of entrepreneurship. And within the program, basically you are allowed to pick one or two of the three, or one role in which you might want to take up in a startup. So it could be you want to be the CEO, so in that essence, you have all the understanding of the inner workings of the business and seeing how you can take it forward, or you can choose a path in technology. So even if you haven't studied technology, you could build out enough skills to be the chief technology officer in your company, or you can also be a product. So you have an understanding of the user's needs and trying to figure out how you can design products that speak to them. So for me, for the different projects, I was able to try out different roles, except the technology one, which while I studied in school, so... It's interesting, naturally I started leaning towards roles of understanding people and trying to have conversations and try to build relationship within that. So within the project and that, I took on a product role and also took on like a marketing role and a community role. And at the end of the program, what happens is you have a chance to pitch your final idea for investments, and they do invest. The funding comes in to help you actually launch this idea. So in Ghana, and you're interested in launching the idea back in Kenya. So you get all the support to come back after the program to actually launch it out in the world. So yeah, that happened. We had an amazing, interesting first idea on farming and helping to help young people embrace farming as a way of creating income opportunities for themselves. Came back, was super interested and super charged to like launch this idea. But again, we are very young, very excited, coming from an environment of all the support, coming back to the world where things are not working, a lot of other things to think about, like, you know, your income, your sustenance and things like that. So naturally, the idea didn't die out, but the team died out naturally. Everyone went on their own way and it was a bit harder to get started in building the idea. And so that sort of helped me think about initially just setting up a consultancy to all the learnings I've gotten to like support a lot of other ideas, get better and things like that. And through that, I got a chance to work for a startup, a social impact startup that was looking to set up shop in Kenya. And they were looking to understand how they can bring their product to the market. And the idea they were looking at was trying to see ways of designing programs or solutions to empower young people to have the choice around their sexual reproductive health. And so worked with them for a year to really identify the needs of the young people around sexual reproductive health and try to design solutions that speak to their needs. And for them, they were looking towards how do you, especially within the reproductive health ecosystem, it's more around impact funding and things like that. So also another interest for them, for the partners, was try to see with all the investments being made in health, especially for this generation, how do we measure back the impact of you know, funding and activities? So we were trying to make sure we design products that speak to the young people, the girls and boys below the age of 19, but also try to understand what are some of the considerations the funders or the people making the investment needed to know, and how do we communicate this back. And yeah, so that was basically my start into now supporting working in the ecosystem, and then had a chance to now work as a teacher. In this time, I had a chance to join an organization called the Africa Leadership University, and they were launching a program in Kenya called the ALX program. And with this program, I worked as a facilitator for leadership and entrepreneurship. And my role there was to support, to design and implement training and support programs for graduates in Kenya who are looking to transition to work. And so we're helping them build out skills in leadership and myself specifically around entrepreneurship. And it was nice for me to do it because I'd tried it before and failed terribly. So I felt it's much easier to share some of the learnings, but also see it in practice. And within that journey, it was easier to work with them and also connect with the ecosystem. And yeah, along that journey, I now again at this moment interacted as I was doing that on the side. I got a chance to get to know about OpenIDEO and understand it's a platform where you could share ideas and give feedback. You could literally comment on any idea. You could connect dots. And for my free time, that was the best thing I could ever do. Just read through the concepts that were submitted, tag, connect one person to another innovator, to them, check out this other idea. And I didn't know what was happening there, but it was really, I found it really fascinating. And over time, got a chance to get connected some of the people within OpenIDEO and also meeting you within the platform. And I think over time, every challenge that was being launched, we were very active in building the collaboration, in helping them think through further. For some of the ideas which were submitted and focusing in Africa or in East Africa's context and all that, it was really interesting also to share with them some of the insights from our ecosystem. And that also helped us really build close collaboration relationships, just helping push the ideas forward. And that allowed me to have a chance to join now the OpenIDEO team as a community manager and a community designer. In this case now, in a more structural way, help support the ideas from the time we have an open call to the times we are looking to support the ideas at the end of the implementation challenge. And part of this activity involved actually looking through all the submissions that come in and trying now to connect the dots, supporting the teams to do research, supporting the team to think about synthesis, supporting the team to think about refinement of the ideas, and providing local insights and perspective when it came to selecting which ideas would receive support because of, again, the contextual knowledge and understanding within that. And along this path, I think that's sort of where I got to learn and understand what is human-centered design, what's design thinking. But for me, it was interesting as I was learning by doing, because I had a chance now to work closely with the team to understand the process. But I think it's something I was doing, some of the steps I was doing naturally before even understanding it, but now over time, got to learn about the framework. And I think that led me into taking on a new challenge. And for this new challenge, I worked with a friend or with a partner to set up a training and an accelerator program for young social entrepreneurs. And I think the beauty of this program, it was interesting challenge setup. One, we had very limited budget, but two, our challenge was how do we design a program that really creates value in a way that we're able to build a brand out of it. How do we become a top desired accelerator program with a lot of constraints? First, we're a new brand or a new name coming to the ecosystem. Two, we have limitations. We don't have our own office. We don't have our own resources and everything else. So it was an exciting challenge to think about how do you first design the program, leveraging a lot of the knowledge and the gaps that exist in the ecosystem, understanding what other programs are offering and what they're missing by speaking to some of the entrepreneurs that have gone through this program. And then over time, having that picture and trying to understand which teams can you bring on board. That time, of course, leveraging some of the people you already know and who are also excited about working in the space. And then having that chance to design the program, test out elements of it freely without feeling constrained around that. So that really helped me in putting up a team and running that program. And from our first pilot cohort to three programs later, where we supported about at least 8 entrepreneurs really refine and grow their businesses over time. And I think it was a lot of learnings within that program. And yeah, at the moment, and the last 2 or 3 years, transitioned from that into setting up an innovation consultancy with 2 main goals. First is to be able to support teams and organizations bring the ideas to life. And these ideas or solutions, it's intentional that they are sustainable, they're actually solving real needs, and they are integrated within the communities that they serve. And so that allows, that was a really passionate area for me to be able to see us rethinking through some of the solutions we can create on the ground. And then on the other bit, as a consultancy or as a studio, have the ability to also explore opportunities in the ecosystem, challenges, and internally, and also with support of partners, being at the forefront of solving some of these challenges, either with our own resources or with support of other resources. And yeah, it's always a journey, I would say, and I'm excited about how the journey evolves even as we move forward.
Thank you. It's super interesting to see, you know, the evolution and how each, you know, phase builds upon the other. And I'm glad you went on OpenIDEO and we had a chance to meet. One thing that you've been talking a little bit about in some of the project over this week is co-creation and, you know, designing with. And so, and co-creation is a big term and one that is sometimes maybe kind of overused these days, in particular in social innovation, international development. And so I know that you always, you know, anytime you told me about your project, you're always focused on your end users or beneficiaries. But I also heard you several times during your stay mentioning the importance of co-creating or collaborating with partners. So having a more of a, you know, an ecosystem view. So can you share a project to illustrate how co-creation worked for you, both with beneficiaries and with partners?
Yeah, sure. I think design or like the work that we do at the moment can only make sense if we're thinking at it from not just beyond the beneficiary's point of view, but other players that can make it possible. And that you're thinking about, of course, the solutions creating an impact, but you're also thinking about the ability of the project to stay beyond, you know, the initial stage where you're just thinking about bringing it to life. You're thinking about ownership, you're thinking about sustainability, you're thinking about growth. You're also thinking about how that project can create new opportunities for other projects to come up or other innovations to come up. So you are thinking through all these different touch points. So at the very beginning, it's interesting to be having this different lens that you're thinking through the project, because at the end of the day, then that's the impact or the change you're trying to create in an environment when the solutions are sustained, when the solutions are owned, and when even newer opportunities or newer things are coming out of it. So we've been privileged to work through different projects, both internally and through our consultancy, that we have in a good way, or maybe at the end of it, you actually realize, okay, maybe we did a co-creation approach, but at the very beginning, you might not really know. And A good example is we were looking to support a partner, and this partner is, again, this is a very interesting challenge because they came with us, they have a solution and, or they have sort of, yeah, an offering, and they're really trying to wonder how the offering can create value and impact in the ecosystem. And so they, this is a company or this is a social enterprise that has in good ways worked a lot on how they can produce solar energy, and within, you know, the solar energy can be used in different ways. So for this enterprise, their solar energy, initially as they were existing, they were using it to power solar lamps, and these solar powered lamps will be used by the fishermen or the fishing community to explore fishing in a safe and environmentally friendly ways. They're also leveraging their solar energy to power, to have solar powered batteries that could help revolutionize motorcycle and transportation within the ecosystem that they were working with. And they were exploring a lot of different ways. So they thought they, within the production, they were having excess solar energy. And so on one bit, they'd seen that, but since they had worked a lot within the fish value chain, they did identify a challenge around a lot of wastage happening within the fish value chain. So ideally, at least 40% of fish that's being produced goes to spoilage, and that happens at different stages of the journey. So at the time the fishermen go out to fish, and if they spend more than 3 hours and the fish that has been captured is not cooled or is not stored in a good way, it starts going bad. At the time where they deliver their capture, the fish capture at the collection point with the women traders who are buying from them, and the women traders don't have a way to, again, best way to store the fish, there's a percentage that goes lost. At the moment where now these women traders sell them to now main aggregators, so the main aggregation points, and for these are big suppliers that, a good example, are collecting fish from the fishing point, a good example in Kenya, maybe from like Victoria or from Kisumu all the way to supply it to Nairobi and other parts of the country. And for these people, if they don't have a cooling solution in large scale, then you can imagine the percentage of the catch that goes to waste. So this is a challenge that identified. Those are existing solutions, but it was leveraging a lot on the national grid and on that. So if anytime there's a power blackout and all that, then there's a lot of effect on that. But beyond that, they had women traders who would have a lot of their, you know, food, like vegetables and all that, go to waste, and depending on the season, because they didn't have a way, again, of better storing them and things like that. So for this approach, definitely we are not the first people to identify the problem, and so that's sort of what we had to learn and realize. We're not the first people to have identified the problem, but the thing is, we needed to know how do we build a sustainable solution around this. So we were very keen to now deploy this model where we are designing with all the stakeholders along the path. One, for the client, we had to introduce to them this new approach of problem solving. Instead of us sitting in our office and thinking about solutions that would work and go deploy, we told them it's important for us to immerse ourselves in the environment to really understand how the ecosystem functions. And now from there, just making them understand that this is the process we're going to take. And what we also made sure we do is we wanted to make sure they're also involved within the journey, so that if they had already a perceived solution that will come out and the solution ends up to be totally different, they have the buy-in. We have the buy-in from them because that we've been with us throughout the process. So that's the first stakeholder we need to make sure we align. We told them the process is going to be like this. We're not really certain around the outcome. Are you comfortable with this? They're like, sure, let's try to learn. So we did ask for them to allocate resources from their side to have one or two or three team members who we can work with the journey, so that they're also able to understand. And then the other bit was now thinking about how do we engage the community in a better way. In this context, the community has a certain local language they speak. So it's harder for us to go and implement this project if there are biases and, you know, cultural information and things like that that we didn't know about. So the good thing is we worked with the local enterprise to now figure out who within the ecosystem are other key stakeholders that you can work with. So from the very beginning, spending a lot of time to understand their culture, their ways of life, their thoughts about cooling solutions and all that, and empower them also again with the process. This is sort of how we envision carrying out the process. We want to understand your needs. then we'll work with you to come up with solutions. Then we'll work with you to uptake those solutions. And then we'll work with you to also suggest for us other recommendations that we feel would make sure that the solution stays longer. And that's sort of the process we took along with them. And from doing research where we were working with their teams and their teams are then helping us carry out the research, we accompanied them to understand how the fish is transported. And a good example, we talked to some of the influencers and they told that we have different organizations coming to ask the same questions to us. So what's different about you? And we were like, we actually going to be creating solutions with you. So when it came to come up with solutions, they did suggest different solutions that they thought would work. And we worked with them now to pilot out the solutions where they were part of either recording the data, sharing back the that, helping us doing the recruitment, helping us run the workshops, helping us think about the price points. And at the end of the day, we were happy to see them having already integrated the project before we even finished it. And I think that was just one way of thinking about co-creation. But at the end of the day, you feel the project already, from the moment you're doing research, you're already seeing a buy-in from the community, not necessarily from the moment you're doing implementation, which is very different than just thinking about a solution and then implementing. And then at that time, that's when you are in bringing in the stakeholders to take on it. Yeah.
It's really interesting that you have first this view of co-creation as involving all the partners, because I think oftentimes this, as I said, this focus on the beneficiary, but then also the way you're thinking of engaging the beneficiary and them even challenging you and saying like, you know, where are we in that, you know, where is our voice? And thinking about it from the start I can see the value. And so one thing that I noticed during, you know, your presentation and our various conversation during the last few days is that you very, very often refer to the importance of designing the various touch points along the experience of a service or a program. And, you know, I was personally very impressed by the intentionality that you put in all your work. So seeing the big picture, but also always talking about taking the time to focus on the smallest detail to really create a meaningful experience for the participants. So I'd like to have your experience on this notion of, you know, how do we design with intentionality? Because, you know, we can talk about it, but it's hard to do.
Yeah, and I think it's all these learnings happen as a result of reflections and seeing and understanding that. I feel like design or innovation is a partnership. And I think it's from the very beginning, how do we want the people we are working with, you know, feel at the very beginning or like throughout the whole journey? And it's really important. So intentionality has to do with what environment are you designing to allow for insights to come out, to allow for ideas to come out, to allow for excitement to come up, and what are the different ways you can bring this to life? A lot of times could be some of the learnings you've had. A lot of times also like engaging the other partner to understand. A good example is typically research is, you know, one party receives, the other party gives, you know, I'm asking you questions and you give me the answers and everything else. And now we're thinking about research as a learning experience for both of us, you know. So how do you even think about, you know, carrying out research as a learning experience and stuff like that? So a good example is co-creation activities when you're doing research and, you know, instead of just asking how old are you, how many people do you have in a family, how can you use that as an exciting experience for the person that you're learning? And a good example is we were working with and we needed to understand for the project we're supporting around the fish value chain, working with amazing women in the ecosystem and everything else. And, you know, they spend all day and all that just thinking about income and providing for their family and things like that. And we thought during this research, can we understand what status or like what situation they're in and what other new experiences could be nice for them? So a good example is when we are designing for other audiences, doing activities such as energizers and everything else works for them. But we do that at the very beginning to create a safe environment. So in this context, what does it mean to create a safe environment or like an exciting, energetic environment for women? And, you know, maybe they're not as highly educated as the students you think about. And a lot of times is, again, taking them from their normal, stressful day. It's, you know, having them do interesting, exciting activities like games, like, you know, very interesting interactions. The goal is, how do you have them bring their true authentic self, but also a self where they feel like, oh, we have been thought about deeply, like this person cares for us, this person is allowing us to be, it's not a typical. And I think this intentionality helps to build connection from the very beginning. And research just becomes more than research. It becomes engagement. It becomes learning moments for both of you. Those bits of it create a really strong bond, and working with them throughout the whole process, going back to them to get feedback, becomes very easy. I'll just give another quick example. So we, for this project, the goal was to help the organization leverage solar energy to set up an ice plant that's powered by solar. And within that, they're able to produce ice flakes and ice, which can be used to store the fish. So we know the organization now can produce ice. The goal, the question now becomes, what model can they use to like run the enterprise? Do they produce in bulk and sell it to distributors? Can they set up shared storage facilities where, a good example in the marketplace, women can come and put their storage there and pay their service? So initially we thought, we put up a shared storage facility, the women will easily, each of them will pay, even if it's I don't know, $0.5 or quite a small amount of money individually to get to store their produce. And what we learned, and we tried that out, the price point was really low, but we didn't see any of them willing to pay or putting their produce there. Then working with them and just building the connection they did, they told us, you know why this will not work? Because we women like to work as a group. So if we ourselves can figure out who is storing what amount of produce for how long, but you charge us as a women group, that's how this thing would work. But if we didn't build those conversations and we're just telling them this idea without having those bonds and natural interactions where they're feeling like they're being taken care of, some of these insights would have taken us way longer to do it. And so it happens at every touch point. And as much as you're thinking about the whole journey, what are the crucial moments that you are designing? What are the crucial moments around the journey that you feel will help you bring out the best experience or the best learning or the best solutions? And what activities can you do together to elicit that environment? But beyond that, it helps create a more long-term relationship on your work, yeah.
One thing that I've been thinking a lot during your trip is you have a lot of experience in Kenya, but also across the African continent. You also worked, you know, through a Panidia with multiple culture and geography. Yet, you know, design thinking is often seen as like something that is more of a universal or culturally neutral method with like standardized templates that we apply. But at the core of design thinking is communication, collaboration, which are both very contextual. So I wonder, you know, how do we contextualize design? How to use design thinking in, you know, cross-cultural, sometimes distributed, like in the OpenIDEO case, context without losing too much in translation?
I think the power lies with the people you're trying to build the solutions for. And a good element of that is to know how they approach innovation in their own context and try to see how you can integrate design into that. And it's interesting because especially now in the digital world and us trying to do distributed work, it can be hard. A good example is you're thinking about designing a solution in an environment such as Somalia, and, you know, maybe locally you'd love to get local insight on that, and you are back maybe in Nairobi. How do you do that, you know, in a more authentic way that also doesn't do that? So what I've seen really work well is, first, the ability again to understand the people you want to collaborate with. In this case, if you're working with a team maybe in Somalia or Ethiopia, is understanding who's part of your team and what do they already know about the ecosystem and things like that. How do you also make them, how do you understand some of the biases they might have in terms of innovation approach? Some of them have lived or professional experience working in some spaces but have never leveraged design approach to it. So one bit is appreciating the skills and the knowledge they bring on board, but also how fast can you also introduce them to the whole design process, and then work with them to understand how do you contextualize the design process in that. A good example, we were supporting a different client, and the goal for this client, they were looking to support their teams based in Somalia and Ethiopia, understand human-centered design, but leverage human-centered design to increase uptake of sexual reproductive health services in the refugee setting. And for these teams that we're working with two diverse teams, one team based in Somalia and one team based in Ethiopia. So the cultures are very different. Their perception around the topic are very different. But Toto's core to it was contextualizing the design process. So we started out by first having an interactive design challenge activity that's outside their topic for them to see how innovation works. So within that, they're able to, you know, they're not showing up as expert within that topic, but they're able to see how exciting the process is and things like that. Then the next step we did was, based on those learnings, how we can contextualize that to tackle the project in mind. So for this one, we were empowering them with the process, but then now we'll have them interpret that to their own teams on the ground. And then they were also able to interpret what their teams on the ground were doing to share back the insights. And what was more exciting for this team, we didn't expect the team to be excited to go out in the field, but at the end of the whole initiative, their biggest moments was like, they have been working on this bit, they always do surveys, they always hear that. But by challenging through this process, they set time to go out in the field, and their best moment during the project was actually talking to users. So that's sort of the learnings that you got. And a big element for that, when you are debriefing with the team at the end of the project, they were like, they see how they can use design not necessarily to solve the problem that, not only to solve the problem they have identified, but just to go about solving other challenges they go through their work. So what we did was already leverage what they know, which is more the technical skills, but introduce design in a way that they can contextualize it. And for us, it was one of the best projects we did. We never had a chance to be on the ground, but we felt the project from the very beginning to the very end. Yes.
Thanks so much. So it's interesting because it's really design thinking as a mindset, and it becomes like a language, you know, between you and the people on the ground, but then also within that organization and between these teams, and it becomes a collaborative language. So
yes, and what's also exciting is the tools of use also change. A good example is some of the common tools, we have to contextualize them, we have to make it easier, we have to see what are the goals of the tools and how do we contextualize the tool to still achieve the same outcome. So there's a lot of changing on that. A lot of the suggestions actually come from the teams that you're working with. By the end of the day, for us, the learnings are more around what did they take away from the process, not necessarily sometimes what solutions they created. And hearing those reflections can tell you how powerful, you know, design thinking can be in different contexts, and the ability for us to be able to contextualize. So long as the outcome we are creating is the solutions are community-owned, and also the partners are excited about leveraging the method moving forward and everything else, yes.
Great. I think this point about community-owned mindset, you know, sustainable solutions, and this idea of an ecosystem, so beneficiaries, you, but different partners and stakeholders, is kind of a key learning for me for today, but also from your visit for this week. So thanks again for being with us today on the Design Thinking Roundtable, but also being here at Nova SB as a social innovator in residence. Thanks, Isaac.
Thank you so much for having me, and I look forward to creating more possibilities through design.
Thank you for listening to the Design Thinking Roundtable, produced by the DESIS Lab and ERA Chair in Social Innovation at Nova SBE in partnership with the DESIS Lab at NYU Makerspace. This episode was recorded at Fidelidad Creative Studio. If you think this episode might be of interest to someone in your community, feel free to share it. Thanks again for listening, and see you next time.